And good evening and welcome to Outbeat Radio. My name is Greg Moralia, just back from the San Francisco Pride Parade, and welcome to this special Pride edition of Outbeat Now. On the phone with us is our co-host, Jeff Basham, who is also at the parade today. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for patching me in here on the phone.
It's great. Well, what an amazing day it was. I mean, the weather could not have been more spectacular. We came across the ferry from Larkspur this morning and, you know, saw the city. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, and it was pretty amazing. But this was your first parade attending and marching, right?
It sure was. It was an amazing, amazing experience. I was in faith as Sister Demand a Refund, part of the Russian River Sisters, supporting positive images, though. Marching and having a great time. So I was driving over the Bay Bridge on the way from Alameda into the festivities this morning. Seeing the pink triangle up on the hill was just an amazing experience. So it was a wonderful time.
Well, you could see it clear down from the beginning of the parade on Embarcadero. You know, there were 180 groups that marched in the parade this year, and some of the groups from Sonoma County that you probably saw as well included Sonoma State University, of course, PFLAG, and then, as you mentioned, the Positive Images group. How many kids were marching today?
There were about 20 in our group. There were some that actually came in and joined us that weren't part of PI, but just wanted to support us and ended up marching with us. So it's a wonderful time.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. And there were just tons of people on the streets. I had the pleasure of marching with the San Francisco Police Department unit, my partner and I, and the cheers and the energy that was there was really amazing.
Absolutely. I had such a positive welcome and just, you know, the crowd yelling to me, you know, I'm in face as a sister. So, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's the sister, you know, so it was really great. I just had such a great time. Just the love and spirit of pride. That's just what it was. It was great.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to walk around the festival at all afterwards?
I did. I walked around the festival for a little while and then ended up joining some of my sisters from the San Francisco Order of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence in the party at the City Hall. So it was a great time, and now I'm back in Alameda taking care of some personal business, and I'll be here for the first part of the week.
Very good. Well, we've got a fantastic show planned for everybody tonight. Joel Bellagio's put together an amazing piece on the history of Pride. Jeff and I are going to give you some reasons that you should have Pride if you haven't been able to find a reason. And then we've got our Outbeat Youth segment. So, Jeff, we're going to say goodbye and move on to the news. And here is the Outbeat Radio News Now with Joel Bellagio.
Good night.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, the European Court of Human Rights has ruled that countries are not obliged to allow gay marriage, rejecting a bid by an Austrian couple to force the state to let them wed. The court said that the rights of the individuals had not been violated by their inability to get married. In Austria, same-sex couples can enter into legally recognized partnerships similar to marriage but different in some ways. A panel of 7 judges ruled unanimously that the couple was not covered by the guarantee of the right to marry in Europe's Human Rights Convention. The judges said there was an emerging European consensus towards legal recognition of same-sex couples, but left it to individual states to decide what form that should take. Meanwhile, in the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a law that required public disclosure of the names of people who signed a petition to put an anti-gay referendum on the ballot in Washington state. The 8-1 decision, with only Justice Clarence Thomas in dissent, said the law requiring records of petition signers to be available to the public does not violate the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The decision was written by Chief Justice John Roberts, whose questions during oral arguments appeared to indicate that he would be inclined to strike down the law. The case, Doe v. Reed, questioned the constitutionality of a Washington state law that makes public the names and addresses of citizens who sign petitions to put various issues onto the ballot. A group called Protect Marriage Washington and two John Doe plaintiffs brought the appeal on behalf of citizens who signed a petition to put a referendum on the ballot, Referendum 71, against a new domestic partnership law. They said the public disclosure of the names violated their right to privacy and freedom of speech. A federal district court judge in Seattle had agreed with them, but the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals did not, so they appealed to the United States Supreme Court. Attorneys for the plaintiffs argued that the First Amendment protects citizens from intimidation resulting from compelled disclosure of their identity and beliefs and their private associations. Chief Justice Roberts said that the state interest in preserving the integrity of the electoral process was sufficient justification for its public records law. He said the law helps prevent fraud, mitigates mistakes, and promotes transparency and accountability in the electoral process. He said plaintiffs' contention that the disclosure law subjects supporters of a referendum on the state domestic partner law to harassment could not, on that specific referendum, justify striking down the public records law for all referenda. During oral arguments, Justice Antonin Scalia, the court's most staunch conservative and a consistent vote against pro-gay positions, said the First Amendment did not protect citizens from criticism or even nasty phone calls when you exercise your political rights to legislate or take part in the legislative process. Scalia wrote an opinion concurring in the judgment, as did several of the other justices. Meanwhile, in the state of Hawaii, Governor Linda Lingle bought herself 2 more weeks to make a decision on legislation that would allow same-gender couples to form civil unions. At a press conference at the state capitol, Lingle announced the bill is one of 39 measures on a list of potential vetoes she was required to unveil by Monday. She stressed that its appearance on the list does not necessarily mean it will be vetoed, although she said historically that's what happens to most bills on the list. Meanwhile, closer to home, Spectrum LGBTQ Center, based in San Rafael, is hosting groups of LGBTQ seniors in Sonoma County. In Sonoma, the group meets the third Friday of each month. The next gathering is July 15th from 10 a.m. to noon at the Sonoma Community Center. On the fourth Tuesday of the month, a group gathers in Santa Rosa from 1:30 to 3 at the Glazer Center at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. The next gathering is July 20th. For more information, check that out online at SonomaBoysNightOut.com. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In 1969, a group of LGBT people rioted following a police raid on the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar at 43 Christopher Street in New York City. Further protests and rioting continued for several nights following the raid. The riots have been cited as the first instance in American history when gays and lesbians fought back against a government-sponsored system that persecuted homosexuals and has become the defining event that marked the start of the gay rights movement in the United States and has influenced gay rights movements around the world. There were, of course, other protests and other events, but the riots at the Stonewall Inn have come to symbolize the defining moment when GLBT people began to rally behind the idea that they were not going to make much progress towards equality if they did not have enough pride in themselves to stand up against their oppressors. Photographs and news of the riots were seen in the media accounts around the world. In November of 1969, a proposal for the first gay parade to be held in New York City was made at the Regional Conference of Homophile Organizations meeting in Philadelphia. The proposal read in part that a demonstration be held annually on the last Saturday in June in New York City to commemorate the 1969 spontaneous demonstrations, and this demonstration would be called the Christopher Street Liberation Day. It was also proposed that contact should be made with other homophile organizations around the country with the suggestion that they also hold parallel demonstrations on that day. The hope was for a nationwide show of support for the GLBT community. As meetings were held and ideas exchanged, it came to be believed that more people would turn out for a march on a Sunday rather than the original proposed day. And so to mark the start of the Stonewall Uprising, the first march was set for Sunday, June 28, 1970. In New York and Atlanta, the annual day of celebration to commemorate the Stonewall Riot came to be called Gay Liberation Day, while in San Francisco and Los Angeles, the day became known as Gay Freedom Day. Both names gained in popularity as more and more cities and towns started holding similar celebrations. In the 1980s, there was a major cultural shift in the Stonewall Riot commemorations. The previously loosely organized grassroots marches and parades became more of an organized celebration of identity. The marches began to drop the terms liberation and freedom from their names, replacing them with a philosophy of gay pride. In 2000, then-President Bill Clinton proclaimed June to be Gay and Lesbian Pride Month in the United States. And on June 1, 2009, President Barack Obama also proclaimed June to be LGBT Pride Month in the United States. All of this history comes together to set the groundwork for global GLBT events happening today, where in 2010, Constance McMillan, the Mississippi teen who was denied permission to wear a tux and bring her girlfriend to the prom, is the Grand Marshal at New York City's Pride Parade. You could be so many more. San Francisco's 40th annual Gay Pride Parade weekend drew thousands to the Civic Center Plaza and even more to the Sunday Parade, as a Backstreet Boys concert and comments from U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi headlined the event. Organizers kicked off the event Saturday in front of City Hall, where thousands converged as vendors sold barbecue and burritos and DJs spun tunes on a large stage. Advocates for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community shared booths alongside corporate sponsors. San Francisco Gay Pride festivities have come a long way since the first parade in 1970, as has the LGBT movement, as exampled by statements made by organizers and historians who said that the first Pride parade in San Francisco had about 150 to 200 people. The following year, there wasn't even a march, just a gathering in Golden Gate Park. Today, the march attracts tens of thousands of people, and a growing number of those are not members of the LGBT community.
I look into the window of my mind. Reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way, can't stop.
As a day of pride in San Francisco draws to a close, this year's celebration, 40 and Fabulous, celebrates the 40th anniversary of the San Francisco Pride Parade and Festival. Greg and I found ourselves asking the question, why should we have pride? We all know personal reasons, but when asked in a more broad sense, really, why do we have such pride? Pride is defined as a feeling of self-respect and personal worth and satisfaction with your or someone else's achievements. In their June cover story, The Advocate magazine published a list of 150 reasons to have pride on more than just a personal level, on a community-wide, nationwide, or even worldwide level. For the next few minutes, Greg and I will recap some of those reasons that today, right now, you, as a member of this wonderful GLBT community, should feel pride for yourself and for your GLBT brothers and sisters.
Because Gene Robinson won't have to sit by himself anymore in the Bishop's cafeteria. Mary Glasspole, widely regarded as a brilliant and passionate Episcopal priest, was installed as the church's second openly gay bishop in May.
Because fair is fair. When Montana's Supreme Court ruled in favor of a lesbian who sued her former partner for joint custody of the children they'd raised together, Justice James Nelson called anti-gay discrimination evil. He went on to say that lesbian and gay Montanans must not be forced to fight to marry, to raise their children, and to live with the same dignity that is accorded to heterosexuals.
Because we can turn a phrase. The new, "Are you a friend of Dorothy?" is really, "Why don't you have a show on Bravo?"
Because we made Broadway what it is today. Stephen Sondheim, the most Tony-winning composer, turned 80 in the spring, and is being feted throughout the year for his body of work. I'll drink to that.
Because hate crimes protections are the law of the land. It was slow in coming, 12 years to be exact, but the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Prevention Act was finally signed into law in October, making it the first major piece of federal legislation passed to protect LGBT Americans. Senator Edward Kennedy first introduced the bill in 1997, 1 year before Matthew Shepard would die at the hands of hate-filled killers. At the signing, Vicki Kennedy said of her late husband, "I think he's smiling right now." When Matthew Shepard's mother was asked what the law's passage meant to her, she didn't hesitate. She said, "Everything."
Because family doesn't always stick together. Adam Buska has enlisted the family of a failed Republican presidential candidate in his no-hate photo campaign for gay rights, with Meghan McCain and Cindy McCain posing for his camera.
Because if Dan Choi is impatient, you should be too. If handcuffing yourself to the White House fence twice was all it took to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a battalion of discharged troops would have already done so. But every civil rights cause needs a symbol, a bus seat, or a monk engulfed in flames. So thanks to Dan Choi for this much-needed visual.
Because we know what's good for the kids, and it isn't discrimination. In April, Chris Piazza, a circuit court judge in Arkansas, overturned a state ban on unmarried couples living together, including same-sex couples, adopting or fostering children. Piazza struck down the law approved by voters in 2008, saying it unduly limited the pool of suitable foster and adoptive parents, and it didn't serve the interests of children who need a home. Because she's left and centered. Rachel Maddow is the smartest person on TV. Period. Because we all need to cross the finish line. It's difficult to describe the final step across the finish line. Whether it's at the end of a 10-kilometer AIDS walk or a 26.2-mile AIDS marathon run, it's a moment of incredible reward and exceptional challenge. The finish line signals the end of months spent fundraising in memory of family, friends, and the entire communities devastated by disease. And it's the last of many miles of training, more than 250 for those who choose a marathon. Since 1985, when 4,500 people in Los Angeles finished the first AIDS walk, the gay community has led the way.
Because the glass is half full, do gays have more fun because we're more optimistic? Or are we more optimistic because we have more fun? We don't really know. But a nationwide survey showed that 1 in 4 LGBT adults believe that the job market will improve within the next 6 months, compared with just 12% of their heterosexual counterparts. Hey, they don't call us gay for nothing.
Because we like assertive men. Thanks to his frequent and rousing statements for marriage equality, MSNBC commentator Keith Olbermann is our silver fox of choice. Because the truth matters. When members of the media spread falsehoods about LGBT people and their concerns, oh, like saying that a presidential appointee is a NAMBLA supporter, Media Matters for America is on the case. Last year, the organization put great effort into debunking bizarre assertions by right-wing outlets about Kevin Jennings, the gay man named by President Obama to oversee Safe Schools programs in the Department of Education.
Because the University of Michigan is making history. For the first time in its history, the 40,000 student-strong University of Michigan has elected an openly gay student body president, Chris Armstrong.
Because when you've got to go, you've got to go. One University of Kansas student has a vision, and he's putting action to words. Matthew Blankers, a trans male, aims for the university to have at least one gender-neutral, handicapped-accessible bathroom in every building. Blankers helped conduct a survey of the campus buildings that already provide such facilities and also hopes to make a map available to students. Because there are children who take the Pledge of Allegiance seriously. Arkansas student Will Phillips became an overnight gay rights icon when, at age 10, he refused to recite the Pledge of Allegiance until gays and lesbians achieve full equality. This year, he accepted the GLAAD Award for Outstanding TV Journalism segment for his appearance with his dad on CNN. Because hospitals have little choice but to recognize our families. President Obama signed a memo in April requiring all hospitals that receive federal funding to give patients the right to determine who can visit them and who can make medical decisions for them if they are unable to do so. He said, "Uniquely affected are gay and lesbian Americans who are often barred from the bedsides of the partners with whom they may have spent decades of their lives, unable to be there for the person they love, and unable to act as a legal surrogate if their partner is incapacitated."
Because George W. Bush is no longer the most talked about elected official from Texas, Anise Parker made history when the lesbian politician was elected as Houston's mayor.
Because we aren't trying to prevent anyone from getting married. You don't see us trying to put hetero marriages to a popular vote. Because our opponents are comical. Carrie Prejean, Miss Opposite Marriage herself, not only has tarnished her right-wing poster girl image with sex tapes, and also has gotten involved in nasty disputes over alleged failure to fulfill her Miss California USA obligations or pay her PR firm. Plus, she couldn't stand the heat of an interview with Larry King, because some drag queens can actually sing. Think your channeling Cher from her half-breed era on a karaoke night means you have talent? You don't hold a candle to Donna Sache, who made history as the first drag queen to belt out, not lip sync, the national anthem at a Major League Baseball game.
Because a majority of people think Don't Ask, Don't Tell has seen its day. According to a February poll, 57% of Americans support dropping Don't Ask, Don't Tell, like a bad habit.
Because we are going to prom, damn it. Constance McMillan took a stand for equal rights when she sued her Mississippi school for forbidding her to take her girlfriend to prom. Derek Martin was more successful. After balking at first, officials at his Cochran, Georgia school are allowing him to take his boyfriend. Because we love to camp. For gay people in Wyoming, camp isn't just a feature of drag shows and old movies. It's an activity you do in the great outdoors to celebrate Pride. The statewide Pride event Rendezvous is a 5-day campout in Medicine Bow National Forest, happening August 4th through 8th this year, with ample entertainment options amid the natural beauty and campfire communion.
Because Pride changes people's lives. A testament to the growing presence of gay life in North Dakota, LGBT activist Stacey Loggering, the mastermind of Fargo's Pride celebration, was honored by the Fargo Human Relations Commission on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, alongside a local rabbi who assists cancer patients and homeless people, and teens who aided Sudanese refugees. And these are just a few of the reasons to have Pride in 2010. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. Stay with us. The Outbeat Youth segment is next. Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCBFM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care. Serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. Positive Images welcomes parents of LGBT youth to a new support group to learn, gain trust, and ask questions about themselves and their youth. Parents, grandparents, and guardians are all welcome. The first meeting will be on Monday, July 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. For more information, go to www.pauseimages.org. And speaking of Positive Images, I have two tickets for caller number 4 to the 6th Street Playhouse production of Rent. This is a benefit for Positive Images, and it'll take place on Thursday, July 8th, 2010. Call me now at 584-2020. That's 584-2020. These tickets will go out to caller number 4. Now stay with us. The Outbeat Youth segment is next. Welcome to this special Pride Month edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a program for and about LGBT youth in the North Bay area. Let's get started right away with a profile of a very special young man, Michael Huerta, who produced a video about his reasons for having Pride in celebration of his 24th birthday. Michael, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Hey, thanks a bunch. Appreciate it.
Well, that was quite a video that you made. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to make that and put that on YouTube.
For a lot of people, I think birthdays and anniversaries and key dates are two things. One, they're a lot of fun. They're a time to go out, have some fun, hang out with friends, hang out with family. But two, I think for a lot of people like myself, they're times of reflection. For me, it was really a milestone in my life to think about where I was. And over that really 2 weeks before my birthday, I began to think about all the events that led to that day and the different experiences in my life that allowed me to make that 24th birthday. And I realized that this year, we celebrate a 20th because the 20th, you know, there's something special about the number 20, or a 21st because we can drink. We celebrate our 25th. There's something special about those numbers, but we don't really celebrate our 24th. nothing too special about it. And this year, I didn't want that to happen, and I wanted there to be something special about it, and I really wanted to give something out there, and that's really why I decided to make the video.
Wow. You know, you're right. I think we sort of wait sometimes for those milestones, and then we forget the quote-unquote little events that, you know, sort of happen in between. Where did you grow up, and what was it like for you when you discovered you were gay?
Well, I grew up in a small city in New Mexico, and actually the city that I grew up in is Las Cruces, and Las Cruces has a population of around 80,000 people, making it the second largest city in the state of New Mexico. So you can see that already the mindset of my community is a little bit different than even in our neighboring states of Colorado, Texas, and Arizona. And so for me, that was really one of the first key identifying factors, that I grew up in a rural state, in a rural community. The second was that I was born and raised Pentecostal. And for those of you out there who aren't familiar with what it means to be Pentecostal, Pentecostals are extremely conservative. Pentecostal women, for example, only wear dresses and skirts below the knee. They don't cut or trim their hair ever in their life. They don't wear makeup or jewelry. The men, and as I was up until about the age of 20, don't wear shorts. They can only wear shirts that go beyond the elbow. They have to keep their hair short. And all Pentecostals can't have TVs in their home. They can't go out to movie theaters. They can't swim in mixed company, meaning men and women. And so for me, that was really the second identifying factor that I had, was that religious background.
Wow.
And the third was really the Hispanic community that I came from, a very conservative Mexican-American background. And all those three things really built up the foundation for my self-identity, understanding who I was and really what I should be.
Right.
And so that's really the circumstances that I grew up in. I think that those are the circumstances that a lot of young people grow up in across this country. One of those identifying factors or something similar to it.
That must have been really, really difficult for you.
You know, it's interesting because growing up in that faith before I was, you know, necessarily dealing with my issues of sexual orientation, that's just the way it was. My family was Pentecostal. Everyone I knew was Pentecostal. What became difficult was when I realized that the feelings I had, the emotions I had, were more than just a phase. That they were more than just, as a pastor once put it to me, a demon who was in my life temporarily. When I realized that it was, in essence, more of who I am, it did two things. One, it put me into a level of understanding that I wasn't ready to have, that I understood and accepted that this is something I was born with. But number two, when you're around that community and when you're around that paradigm, that who you are is so wrong and so evil, and when you get the understanding that you were born that way, you almost, in a twisted kind of way, wish it was a demon possessing you instead of something that you can't change or something that's innately in you. And so that was really the struggle for me. When I realized that it is something that wasn't going away, that it wasn't a demon that could just be cast out, that it was really who I was, it was at some level of relief, knowing that this is who I was and that, you know, that I was born this way, but in a lot of other ways, it just wasn't.
That must have been really, really tough. I mean, I consider myself really fortunate. I grew up in the Catholic Church and, you know, did catechism and was an altar boy and the whole thing. And all the trauma I hear from people about how they were preached to and told they were sinful and evil, I never heard.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had to grapple with any of that. And certainly, you know, not the type of struggle that you had there.
Yeah. And, you know, and here's, you know, outside of just me, I think here's the interesting thing about it. I think LGBT people who come from my background would probably agree that the people who, you know, look at you, your pastors and your preachers and your youth pastors and ministers, when they look at the young people and they say homosexuality is wrong, those who conduct homosexual behaviors will go to hell. I think they would tell you that those people who say it don't say it out of hate, and they do say it out of love. And I understand that that doesn't make sense to a lot of other people. But, you know, I have close family to me who, when I came out, were just so adamant about letting me know how wrong it was, about how evil I was to be that way and to come out that way. And something that I had to grasp and something that I had to realize really for personal growth and more importantly for the growth of the movement is that when we get attacked that way from certain individuals, and I would say from largely most of them, especially in the religious communities, when we get attacked by them, we're getting attacked through love. And I think that's important to understand, because if that's actually what's taking place, and if the attack from a family member or from a religious community comes out of love and not out of hate, then there's room to grow. And that's why in the video I said, as best that I knew how to put it, for those of you who get up in your pulpits and you preach, just remember every time you do, a young person like me is listening, and they are literally on the edge deciding whether or not they can continue. And I think that if you come from a point of love and understanding, I think that realization really can hit home with a lot of people. Yes, believe what you may about the LGBT community. That's fine. But just remember, when you speak, there is a young person listening. If you just hate, and if your words come out of hate, there's nothing you can do about it. I don't think there's anything our community can really do. But if their words and their actions are coming out of love, love for our community, I think there's a lot of room to work, and I hope that kind of makes sense. That's where I come from on that.
Yeah, and it actually makes a lot of sense, and it's compassionate, and it's very understanding. I'm not sure everybody would see it quite as well as you do.
Yeah, and I understand that too, because, you know, it's hard on both ends. It's hard, especially, you know, as an LGBT person, to look at a preacher, you know, be it a man or a woman, talking about how homosexuals are going to hell, understanding that their words are affecting tons of people across the world, and then to have a realization that they're saying that out of love. That's a difficult thing to do. It's a difficult thing to understand. Right. But I think on many levels it's necessary. But I'm also quite aware of the fact that there are people who just, for all intents and purposes, hate our community.
Right.
And they always will, and their words are not said at all with any amount of love or understanding, and that they're out there really to destroy us. And I understand that, and I'm aware of that.
You mentioned in the video that you had attempted suicide before. What kept you from pulling the trigger?
You know, that's a question I asked myself in those 2 weeks of reflection before writing the video. And the truth is, I really don't know. And I think that's the sad part, because one of the other things that triggered my making the video was a year prior, one of my friends here in New Mexico, an amazing young man by the name of Kahlo Benavides, had done a lot of work in HIV and AIDS prevention. He was HIV positive himself, had done work publicly on MTV about it, ended up taking his own life. And that was just a few days before my birthday 1 year ago. And I thought about that. I thought, here we are, two people who grew up in similar circumstances. He pulled the trigger and I didn't. And I said, what is that thing that kept me going? And I think at the base, because it's still something that I'm reflecting, I think at the base it was two things. It was, number one, a deep understanding from prior religious experiences and faith experiences that all things, whether they be bad or good, harmful or helpful, will pass. That old saying, this too shall pass. And I think it wasn't a conscious understanding at the moment, but a really deep understanding that this too, like everything else, shall pass. And if I can just hold on just 1 minute, as much as I don't want to, if I can just hold on, things will get better and things will move on. Number two, I really, really thought, and you know, I thought about the people in my life who I knew it would affect. Though I felt alone, though I felt like I couldn't continue, the idea that I could put that much harm and hurt into someone else, specifically in my case, my mother, was not something that I could bear, or that I could allow her to bear. And so those two things, one, understanding that this would cause harm to others, in particular my mother, and two, the idea that if I could just hold on just a bit longer, that this too shall pass, those two things are the things that really held me over. And understandably, those are two things that when you're in that moment, when you're in that pain and that despair, those are two things that it's very difficult to understand.
Let's listen now to the audio from Michael Huerta's video.
Hi, everyone. It is April 29th, 2010, and it happens to be my 24th birthday. I just wanted to spend a quick moment of your time sharing with you my birthday wish for today. I really shouldn't be here. Throughout my life, I've struggled with understanding who I was and why I was that way. I struggled with feeling like I deserved to be here around so many amazing people, and I struggled with the idea that some God out there existed that not only loved and accepted me for who I was, but who created me as I was. And because of that, on several occasions in my past, I got very close to ending my life. In fact, just a few years back, I loaded a gun, I put it to my head, put my fingers on the trigger, and I just waited. I really shouldn't be here today, but I am. And as you know, a lot of young people can't share that same story. They're not as lucky. They can't celebrate with you on their 24th birthday or their 23rd birthday or their 20th or in some cases their 18th birthday. They, for whatever reason, couldn't hold on just one day longer, just 1 hour longer, just 1 minute longer. And so today, my birthday wish is three things. First, to those of you, to my brothers and sisters in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, and to those of you who support us, thank you, thank you, thank you. You'll never know how much your support means to so many people like me, so many people, young people out there who are struggling right now. But my wish for that community is that we all remember and understand that we're on a similar journey. And while no journey is the same, we all face similar problems. And it can be very easy to be caught up in who we are and who we're doing and what we're wearing and what we're trying to accomplish that we forget we need to support each other. And I hope that I can support you and that you continue to support each other. Second, my birthday wish is to all of those who don't understand my community and who don't support our rights and who aren't there yet with us. I understand where you're coming from, and that's okay. But I hope and pray that you understand every time you preach, every time you teach, every time you protest, a young person out there is listening. And a young person deciding whether or not they can make it one more day is hearing what you have to say about who they are. And I hope that through all the politics, through all the passion, you remember real people are listening. And finally, my biggest birthday wish are to those young people out there, those who I've spoken with in the past and those who may be watching right now, who are struggling yourself. Those of you who don't know if you can make it one more day, another week, or even just another hour, just another minute. I want you to know that I understand and that there's a lot of people out there who understand. If you can just bring up the courage to hold on just a few more minutes, just a few more hours, just a few more days, I promise you everything will get better. I promise you that you'll be happy celebrating your 24th birthday, that you'll be happy celebrating your 25th, your 30th, your 40th, your 50th birthday, if you can just hang in there. So with that, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for your own birthday wishes, and thank you for continuing to spread the love. You have a great day. Bye.
Michael, you're really an amazing young man. Thanks for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth and sharing some of your story. If you'd like to watch his video or hear the full interview with Michael Huerta, go to our website at outbeatyouth.com and click on show notes at the top of the page. Now here's Junior with this month's movie review.
My name is Junior, and here's the movie review of the month. There are very few films that give me a happy cry, a sad cry, and make me furious, and that's what The Mormon Proposition did. A portion of the film focuses on a gay couple, Tyler Barrick and Spencer Jones, who were both brought up, raised Mormons. Another portion of the film is how and what Mormons do to get Proposition 8 passed. It really sickens me thinking about how they go about their ways. I thought I knew everything I knew about Proposition 8, but it turns out I learned way more than I thought. The first thing you need to do to pass a proposition is money, and Mormons had lots of it. Mormons only make 2% of the population in the state of California, yet they came up with over 70% of the funds. But the second thing you need is volunteers, and Mormons are really good knocking door to door and getting people to listen to them. The Mormon prophets say a lot of hurtful things. A few say that it's better to be dead than to be gay. I hope one day Mormons will look back and say, geez, we didn't allow gay people to get married, just like they did with black people, and how did they not allow them in their church until 1978. No matter what religion you are, you should keep it out of people's lives. Please go watch this film. I learned a lot. I'm sure you will, too. You can catch this film at the Rialto Lakeside Theater in Santa Rosa or the Elmwood Theater in Berkeley. I am Junior, and that's a wrap.
Of course, we're celebrating Pride this month, and now that summer's here, it's a perfect time to catch up on some reading. But where can LGBT youth find good books these days? Well, here with us tonight is Lee Wind, who created a website just for this purpose. Well, Lee, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited to be on your show.
Tell me a little bit about your blog and how you got started.
Absolutely. It's called I'm Here, I'm Queer, What the Hell Do I Read? And the genesis of it was basically that I was a teen and there was nothing for me to read. I was gay and closeted and read voraciously. I was always reading a fantasy book or a sci-fi book, and none of them had gay characters or themes or anything gay. There was a sort of subtext of the Anne McCaffrey Dragon Riders of Pern series that off the page, between the lines, you could maybe imagine that there was some gay stuff going on. About 2.5 years ago, I realized that there actually were some books out there, besides the ones that I was trying to write for teenagers, that did have some gay characters and themes. And when I tried to find out what the books were, I ran into some huge problems, especially when I went to a site like Amazon and I put in, you know, gay novel. I ran into what I like to call the Marcia Gay Harden problem, which is that if you have TiVo or some other, you know, DVR recording program and you want to watch all the gay movies out there, you enter in gay and you end up with a list of everything Marcia Gay Harden has ever acted in. There were lists, but they weren't particularly helpful. And then when they actually did include gay teenage characters, it wasn't a safe environment. There would be a lot of hate speech in the reviews because it's reader reviews, and a lot of people would be, you know, up in arms and saying this is really inappropriate and horrible, and it was not a very safe environment. And I realized that what I really wanted to create was a safe website, a safe location where people could find out what were all the books out there with gay and lesbian characters and themes. And I came upon the idea of calling it I'm Here, I'm Queer, What the Hell Do I Read? And the idea is that it really captures comprehensively what are all the books out there for teenagers that have gay or lesbian, transgendered, bisexual, queer, by which I mean gender nonconforming, and also sort of the catch-all queer to cover the whole rainbow of our community. And it's been an amazing journey, 2.5 years. So far, I think I just passed a 250,000 page loads and over 160,000 visitors. People are starting to stumble upon it like you did.
Well, great. Well, what's been some of the response that you've received from people who've been on the site?
It's been really nice. I mean, one of the fun things about blogging is that, you know, I blog 5 days a week, and I do about 2 or 3 books a week, and then I talk about social issues, and I have a feature on Mondays that provides a topic for a gay-straight alliance club at high school to talk about if they chose to, and I do surveys occasionally, so I'm having a lot of fun with it, and I think that people are enjoying the variety to it. I have about a third of my readership is teenagers, another third is 20-somethings, and then the balance being older adults. And I think that everybody's sort of enjoying the fact that a resource does exist and that it's a really safe community. I like to call it my virtual GSA. And as you spend more time on it, you start to recognize different commenters and really get a sense of community.
Right. Well, that certainly answers the question about, you know, what do you hope LGBT youth get from it? I mean, it's a great thing to be able to provide something that a GSA can connect with, for example.
Thank you. Yeah, I really think the biggest challenge of being a teenager, besides figuring out who you are and how life is going to possibly work for you, is also being heard and not only just finding your voice, but feeling like your voice is heard in the world. And that's one of the reasons why, for when I do post about a book, I don't give my own review generally. I really try to just share what the book is about, what's the queer content in the book. I link to both to buy the book if someone wants and also to the author's website if they have one. The idea being that all the comments are reader reviews of the books. Because I didn't want to create a site where it was like, Lee likes this and Lee doesn't like this. I didn't want it to be my thumbs up or thumbs down on things. I was much more interested in creating a comprehensive resource where, in a safe way, with no one saying anything hateful, people could really figure out if it was something they'd be interested in finding out more about or not.
Well, certainly the number and types of LGBT literature has really exploded over the last decade. What kinds of changes have you seen in the types of books being published for LGBT youth?
What's been really fascinating is seeing the sort of evolution of books for queer teens. it originally started out, and everything was a problem novel. And it was such a problem that they couldn't even make the main character be gay or lesbian. I'm thinking of books like Deborah Davis's My Brother Has AIDS, which was the main character was actually a teenage girl whose older brother was gay, and he had AIDS, and of course that was a problem. But it wasn't so much, I mean, he was dying of AIDS, and that was a problem, but the fact that he was gay was the real problem of the book. It's a beautifully written book, but very much almost a period piece. It was, being gay was the problem, and there were a ton of books about that. And then the next evolution became books where being gay wasn't really a problem, but it was still sort of what the book was about in a lot of ways. I'm thinking of books like David Levithan's Boy Meets Boy, which is almost in a parallel universe to our own, where, you know, the star quarterback on the high school team is a drag queen called Infinite Darlene, who's over 6 feet tall, and there's a love story, and it's quite sweet. Actually, even the book on the cover has little candy hearts, the kind they give out at Valentine's Day. Uh-huh. So that was sort of another evolution of the books. And then in the past couple of years, we were getting genre stories, which are we sort of have both about coming out and also just like a great story. So like an example of the ones that were, it's a genre story, but the character is still dealing with coming out, is Perry Moore's Hero, which is sort of a world of superheroes, and this kid is a superhero, but he's also secretly gay. So he's sort of hiding two things. And then there are also these stories where it's just not about the being gay. It's just another, it's a great story. And Melinda Lowe just came out in the past few months with Ash, which is a lesbian retelling of Cinderella. And the fact that she's a lesbian isn't really the point of the story. So there's something quite wonderful about that.
It is interesting to see the changes that have taken place. And instead of, you know, sort of casting the gay kid as the problem or the disease or the, you know, the tragedy, it's really integrating gay people into sort of mainstream life stories.
Yeah, Ellen Whitlinger, who's written a number of books that sort of focused on the queer characters. In fact, she's written one of the handful of transgender teen stories called Parrotfish. She talks about how it's really important in the works that she writes that aren't focused on a queer character. She tries to include secondary characters that are gay or lesbian because she really feels that it's important for teenagers reading today to see sort of a reflection of what's really going on and a normalization of queer characters. And I think we're seeing lots more authors do that.
Well, that's certainly promising, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes me very happy.
Well, as an author myself and someone who enjoys reading, one of the things I've find really sad is sort of the disappearance of the gay bookstore. It strikes me that websites like yours now are even more important for queer youth because the gay bookstore was the place to go for information. It was a place you could go to that had a very focused set of topics and books, and you knew you could get what you were looking for there. You know, what do you think? Where's the next place to go? Where is there one?
That's a great question. I think that one of the challenges with bookstores, the few that are left, is that they really can't shelve a book in two places. And we have this sort of back and forth in our community that we want a gay bookshelf because it's kind of cool. It's neat to see what are all the books with queer heroes and heroines in one spot. So you can kind of go through them and get all excited. Oh, I haven't read this one. I haven't read this one. And yet, at the same time, we don't want to be ghettoized. And we want our stories to be integrated with all the other wonderful stories out there, with characters of color and characters who have other sort of personality aspects that aren't represented by the mainstream. And it's a real challenge because I think in a physical bookstore, you're stuck, you're trapped, you're in one spot or the other. And a lot of bookstores, I'm thinking of like Powell's, up in Portland, they're awesome, but they don't really have a separate bookshelf. They just have it all integrated in throughout all the teen novels. And when you have that situation, you have really no idea that Ellen Hopkins Trix has any queer content at all. And it does, and it's amazing, and it's quite significant. And I think that unless you have a site like mine or Daisy Porter's YA review site, it's really hard to find out what are the books out there with gay and lesbian characters and themes. So, yeah, I really feel like my site's doing something cool, but at the same time, it's not a physical place. And I think that it's a real challenge for our community to know where is the next where's the next physical gathering spot? I think that there, you know, some of the big cities were lucky to have gay and lesbian centers, community centers, and yet generally those skew towards helping the more disadvantaged socioeconomically side of our community. And then there are the bars, but that certainly leaves out the teenagers and also the people that aren't particularly into the bar culture. So I really think we have a bit of a problem in our community right now, a challenge that hopefully something will rise to meet it. Like, where's the physical meeting space? You know, where do people gather? Where's that sense of sort of community ritual and tribe? I think that's super important, and maybe it's going to end up being some sort of evolution of these gay-straight alliances from high schools and now junior high schools. And I heard the other day somebody contacted me on Twitter that their child at elementary school has a gay-straight alliance.
Oh, really?
And maybe that will go up into colleges, and we'll have more gatherings of that sort, because I think that being able to actually gather in person is an incredibly important thing.
So you mentioned you're an author yourself. What kinds of things have you written?
Well, I used to be a television editor, and this is sort of my second career. My husband and I had a daughter about 7 years ago, or she would tell me six and a half years ago. And I became the stay-at-home parent, and now she's in elementary school, and I have a little more time, so I'm really trying to push my career as an author of middle grade and teen novels. I'm working on a middle grade novel where, interestingly enough, the main character is not queer, but deals with the issue of coming out as an atheist. And I think that there's something to be said about normalizing the outsider experience and speaking to that. And whether it's a kid that doesn't believe in God and it's a week before his bar mitzvah and he comes out about it and has to figure out what is he going to do, or if it's an adventure story about a gay kid that, you know, shows that you can be gay and have an adventure and fall in love and have a happily ever after. Those are all really important stories that still, I think, haven't really been told enough. So I'm very excited about being a writer.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite amazing.
So, Lee, tell us the website our young readers should go to find that perfect book this summer.
It's www.leewind.org.
We've been talking with Lee Wind, the creator of a website called I'm Here, I'm Queer, What the Hell Do I Read? Lee, thanks so much for being with us on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
Well, that's it for this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. And you can always listen and download our shows on iTunes or from our website at outbeatyouth.com. Thanks for listening. Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. Well, that's it for this very special edition, the Pride edition of Outbeat Now. Tune in next week for Living Proof on Outbeat Radio. You'll find that only here on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. Happy Pride, everyone.